Thank you. It's very nice to be here among our Finno-Ugric brother people, even if we unfortunately cannot understand our related languages very well. So I'm from Tallinn University of Technology, where I am head of a chair of law and technology. And I apologize then beforehand for my subject perhaps being also quite technical or technological. Some of the things that have been said have already been said. So I will try to go quite quickly over some of the issues that other colleagues have mentioned. But I will still want to explain to you a little bit why I'm talking about something as technical as digitalization of broadcasting, digitalization of broadcasting transmission, to be more specific, is what I'm talking about, because we have a number of ways of using the word digitalization or digitization. So we have the setting of the new media environment in general that colleagues have already expressed. With globalization, we have the individualization where people actually have a different role. These changes to the media landscape are something more than changes like, say, for instance, from black and white television to color. It's not just a technical change that changes the impression we have, but it's actually something that creates a new environment. And this little picture here is just a kind of a simple way of expressing what a number of colleagues have said about the differences between the traditional differences, I should say, between broadcasting and telecommunication that are no longer possible to apply. We used to know that broadcasting was point to multipoint, which means that it doesn't actually matter if there is just one person looking at a particular broadcast or listening to a particular broadcast. It is still multipoint because there could be an undetermined larger number of people consuming this content, whereas telecommunications point-to-point, two people, again, doesn't matter if it's a conference call with a number of people, but it's a determined set of individuals. And all lawyers, not just media lawyers, but everybody will immediately understand why is this so relevant, because if it is point-to-point, there is no reason for the state to have any interest in the content. If you're talking about something illegal, nobody would think of making the telephone company liable because you made a phone call to plan a bank robbery, for instance. This was very easy and evident. The same way it was evident that when it came to point to multipoint, there might be a reason for some interest in the content, if we put it that generally. Bans on incitement, on hate speech, on certain types of pornography, etc. And then came internet, and everything is different. And I would say this is absolutely impossible. It's not possible to exaggerate the importance of this, because this has meant, as many colleagues have said, I'm sure others will say it again, because it's inevitable comment when talking about media issues, that now anybody can be a participant. We don't know who we're actually communicating with. Without any gatekeepers, we can reach a huge audience. So the question is, how long can we fit the shoe of the old legislation to a completely different foot? Because what is going on, I think, so far with media legislation is that we're trying to see how to best make existing legislation in the broad sense, existing rules, existing principles, somehow fit to this new reality. Lawyers are, of course, used to this. We're always applying legislation that wasn't written for exactly the situation we're in at the specific moment. But there comes a point when there's too big a discrepancy. So we're still saying that all those principles that have been established for media regulation can somehow still apply in this new world, albeit in a different manner. But perhaps this is becoming a little bit too difficult. And I'm not just going to show you funny pictures. This is the last of the funny pictures, I'm sorry to say. But the question is, with law and technology, it's like the chicken and the egg. What comes first? It's very difficult to regulate something that isn't well known technologically. So it might seem evident that obviously we first need to have the technology and then we think about how to regulate it. But as the developments have been so fast in many areas of technology, not least in the communication sphere, this often means we cannot regulate. because it is just a fait accompli. We have a situation which is very difficult to put the genie back into the bottle, to mix metaphors. So this is internet, the way it looks today. There's no way it would have looked like this if there had been a realization when it was first created, how important it was going to be. I'm a great fan of a free and open internet, so I'm not propagating regulation, but I think it would have been very difficult for politicians to take such a relaxed attitude to it had anybody been aware of the actual consequences of it. On the other hand, then, if we try to legislate, regulate before we know the technology, this is, can also be very harmful and may not fit at all after only a short period. So this rather general introduction, which I know also repeated some of what colleagues have been saying, leads me into my actual topic then, which, as I said, is quite technical, and which is about the digitalization of broadcasting transmission, which is something decided by the International Telecommunications Union with the deadline this year for the switchover in most parts of the world. And it's a binding obligation for ITU members. ITU is the world's largest international organization, so pretty much every country is a member. And it has a long tradition of taking binding decisions because, as you probably all well know, it's also the organization dealing with radio spectrum already for a long time. There are also other standards, recommendations from, for instance, the European Union about digitalization. But basically, the details can be up to the countries to some extent, but it is not a choice. It is a binding obligation for countries. It has been presented, and I'll come a little bit in a minute to what it actually is and why it's relevant and so, but it's sometimes presented as dealing with lots of the issues of communications policy as a kind of a recipe for lots of ills. But of course, by itself, it doesn't really deal with these problems, but it can perhaps help. But the first comment to make maybe is that we've heard from colleagues about principles of technology neutrality, about how it is not possible. We've heard of it more specifically, but we've also heard it underlying some of the more philosophical presentations this morning, whether it is actually possible and good to regulate speech at all, or maybe with more and more of this, all of us being participants in the communications landscape, it is actually very difficult to take any firm positions on regulation. And one of the consequences of this way of thinking is the technology neutrality, which is expressed by, for instance, the European Union, by other bodies, which means that regulation should not set what technology to use, but regulation should focus on the reasons for regulating something. So not limiting a certain type of speech on a certain technology, but limiting it because of the content of the speech. And this generally is the principle. The more neutral, the better. So having then an international organization setting a deadline, forcing countries to go to digital transmission of broadcasting would appear face value to be against this trend. But here one then has to take a slightly longer perspective to think a bit more to the future, because what will this give? What is it actually? Well, it means that the content is broken down into digits, which take less space than the traditional signal. So it means that much more can be fitted on to the frequency spectrum. This may mean in the future there is no need for licenses for broadcasters, but anybody can basically get out there. So maybe the radio and television will become a little bit more like internet, is that if you have a nice content, you can just get it out there also on the airwaves, not just on the internet. But of course, not just for broadcasting, but maybe the key push factor for this whole principle is the convergence, where this picture I showed you with the convergence from the viewpoint of the content and of the people, it also is a convergence with, when it comes to the actual technological issues, a lot more users want to use the spectrum, mobile telephony or internet, etc. So after this process of digitalization has been completed, the idea is that the spectrum will fit much, much more. So there will be possibilities for proper technology neutrality, for increased freedom of expression, for increased use of communications. So it's good. The medicine may be a bit tough at first, but it leads to a very good result, which is the philosophical motivation why this is not seen to be contradicting the other trends in the communications landscape, but actually supporting them. But why then worry about it from a freedom of expression viewpoint? It could seem to be all very technical, and in many ways it is, and I will briefly just present you some of those challenges, and you will recognize that many of these are actually more perhaps technical than what we would immediately see as freedom of expression issues. But still very crucial when it comes to broadcasting, to receiving media content. Because to receive digital broadcasting, television as is what has been digitalized so far mainly, you need special equipment. So people, and here we also have, of course, this kind of confluence of different factors, that the people who tend to have the old simple television sets tend to be the poorest people who have the least means to go and get themselves new equipment. And this may mean that, and they may also be the kind of people who are the least likely to use internet or other means of technology to access media content. And think now in a global perspective, not just in Europe, where perhaps this is less of a problem, although it is also a problem. We have socioeconomic differences quite large between European countries as well. But especially in a global perspective, this may mean that the people who jointly watch one old television set in a village will have absolutely no access to broadcasting content because no longer can this old TV receive anything. It's also very important to take a citizen perspective when thinking about the coverage and not just say that now the territory is covered by the signal, because having access to broadcasting isn't just that broadcasting is there if you have absolutely no way of actually receiving it. So the question is, what is the public service element in this? And this is one of the interesting things with the digitalization, that at a time when there is a lot of discussion whether public service broadcasting has any room in a modern media landscape, which is so diverse with so many choices for people, does it make sense that the public sector is going to pay for broadcasting? At this very time, we have this process of digitalization where there might be an extra big role for the public sector to actually ensure that people can have access to broadcasting. Through, for instance, giving support to equipment, which is done also in some European countries, but far from all, and in some other countries around the world where people actually get a subsidy for receiving this, which of course creates problems. Who is going to exactly get the subsidy? There's a cost with deciding it or so. So many countries go instead for strict enforcement of consumer protection and of trying to ensure that there is a variety of packages available, so you can choose if you want to pay more or less on equipment available, etc. The process definitely means that the regulator has a role. It was very interestingly discussed before the coffee break how if freedom of speech should be regulated at all, or if freedom, the more freedom the better, or perhaps freedom will only have a role. I mean, I'm very freely interpreting the colleagues who were speaking before, but whether freedom has actually a better chance if it's regulated. And if one wants to propagate a bit for regulation, at least for some more time, some more years, this perhaps shows such a reason, because we will have to have somebody to deal with these transition issues into the digital broadcasting world. And here the independent regulator has an important role to look at that this access is actually going to be real access. But the role of regulation and of licensing changes and becomes very similar actually to telecommunications licensing, where the questions are actually to ensure the possibility of reaching the audience. So gone are the days of this total look on a broadcaster, somebody with the technical equipment, with the content, and et cetera. And instead we have lots of different players different licensing for the network operators, the infrastructure owners, for those who provide the service, for those who provide the content. So it's broken down in lots of bits in those countries that have already digitalized. The transmission facilities could be a potential bottleneck. And this is for those of you who may be familiar with telecommunications regulation, or ICT regulation is the more modern term, but for the telecom part of it, is that you cannot have everybody having their own infrastructure the way it was possible in the pre-digital broadcasting environment, which means that you need to get access to somebody who has infrastructure. I always like to use the example of trains, liberalization of railways, because sometimes using a model from somewhere else, it's kind of conjures up a more easily understandable picture. And then you can think of the United Kingdom, which was the first country in Europe to liberalize the railways. If every train operator would have their own tracks, there will be nothing but tracks in the whole of the UK, or at least in the whole of England. So this is clearly not possible. So we want competition on trains. The tracks have to be somehow separated. But to compete on trains, obviously, you need access to tracks. So this is the same issue for the digital broadcasting. You need access to the infrastructure if you are going to be able to compete. And here again, we show why the regulator, the state, will have a role, because the market is imperfect. Somebody is much stronger player than the others in the market. So in such a situation, you either then need stronger regulatory intervention, or some countries have actually taken what may seem as a simple way out, which is to have state publicly owned, maybe the public service broadcaster owning the multiplexes, so they're not operating on exactly commercial conditions. It's very important to make sure that this concentration does not lead to a concentration also when it comes to media content, that you will have some players that are the only ones rich enough to have this infrastructure that are also able to have all the content, because in that case we may lose the very benefit that I mentioned a few minutes back about having more content available, more broadcasting, more benefit for people to see more. Here, one quite perhaps simple tool here, regulatory tool, is just to prohibit the same entity from owning infrastructure and from providing services, something also used with lots of other utilities. The problem here with the process is that the cost for setting up infrastructure, etc., tends to be quite high. And this then leads to another whole body of issues, and I'm not going to talk about them in too little time here. Also, I think maybe it is not so interesting for everybody who's not so interested in competition law issues, etc. I discuss it a little bit more in my chapter in the book. But there are a number of issues here when you start then supporting infrastructure. Unsurprisingly for everybody who knows the media situation in Europe, Italy has had a number of cases in the European Court of Justice of unfair support to certain broadcasters in this respect. There tends to be these issues of how to avoid lots of other negative consequences. Also environmental consequences. You actually don't want too much hardware. You want it to be used in the most suitable manner. There are a number of groups that need to be considered in the transition. We need to think about the audience and its access to diverse and pluralistic broadcasting. We need to think, how do the broadcasters survive these huge investments they may have to do? What's the regulator do? Is it the same regulator? If it's a converged one, it's probably well equipped to deal with it. If those countries that do not have converged regulators, who is going to deal with what? And it may look like a good idea to have a long process of transition, but that is expensive. So you want to find some optimal solution, which I think doesn't exist. So one just needs to decide that at some point this transition has to happen and you need to push for it. Then sometimes it's tried in some countries to make some incentives for broadcasters to provide something for them to make them quicker go into this system, like they will have increased coverage, they will have longer license period, or maybe not have a license fee. Malta, for instance, used as the first country to do that, that during the process no license fees were being paid. In Estonia, we have a special system for financing our public service broadcaster, which is paid for by the nationwide private broadcasters, but in the digitalization process that stopped, they could keep that money and use it to prepare for the digitalization. If they hadn't prepared enough, they would have had to retroactively pay it again to the public service broadcaster. So a number of different ideas to try to find ways of making this process happen. And the final thing, because I see I'm running out of time, is as well to then just underline that it's very important to think about how are the channels selected. Because as we all know, just having a lot is not the same as diversity and plurality. So a multitude of channels is possible because of digital transmission, but this multitude, if it is all the same kind of content, it actually does not add anything. So it's very important to see how are the channels selected. What is the process for this? Will it be done by the regulator in a traditional manner, or will there be some special channels that the state will sponsor? Interestingly enough, the first countries to digitalize, Sweden and Finland, that have strong traditions of very little intervention, to put it that way, from the state. But they actually had the state select channels for the first digital broadcasting, so not even the regulator, but the actual state. So somehow this needs to be considered. So I will end here, not to abuse my time too much, and just say that the, again, to maybe remind why I'm talking such a technical topic, is that this is one of many examples of how the change in technology actually has lots of repercussions on issues of freedom of expression, of access to media. That means that there is also a convergence in how we who work with media legislation issues have to think. We can no longer think too much in specific boxes, but we have to actually understand the technology to be able to contribute in the legal field. Thank you very much.